Hey everyone, it is Monday, January 3rd. Happy New Year to all of our Hoops fans out there. Adam Azer with Greg Urbano on the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Greg, what's going on?
Not too much. Had a happy New Year. Wish you the same. Obviously, we're here. Going to talk a lot about basketball, a lot of things going on. Plenty to discuss, a couple injuries that just happened, so yes. A lot on the docket today.
Yeah, big-time injuries to the Mavs, to the Celtics, yeah. Kevin Garnett, and as we record this show, it is Monday. Boston's 25-7, but the Heat half game behind them in the Eastern Conference at 26-9. So we're going to bring in our CBSSports.com NBA blogger, Ben Golliver, right now for the starting five. We start out the show with five questions for our blogger. Ben, we're going to bring you in. First question for you. Kevin Garnett is out maybe about 2 weeks, and the Heat are playing some great basketball. The Celtics have struggled a little bit lately with the injuries. Are the Heat about to run away with the Eastern Conference?
You know, it sure looks like it. I think we can probably agree, you know, it's kind of a four-horse race out east. It's Boston, Miami, Chicago, and Orlando. I think they're all cut above from everybody else. But you look at Miami, it seems like they got all their problems out of the way early. You know, they took a few weeks to really gel, get things together. Chris Bosh had to finally show up and get some rebounding numbers, but now they're clicking on all cylinders, running off another big win streak after they just finished another huge win streak. So it doesn't seem like there's much competition between them and anybody else when you're looking at who has the best luck. You know, Chicago's dealing with Joakim Noah's injury. As you mentioned, Kevin Garnett's gone down. Orlando's trying to put the pieces together after all those trades, and now Brandon Bass might be having a knee surgery potentially. So it seems like they're having the best luck. They're going to get Mike Miller back, and I wouldn't bet against the Heat at this point to take the Eastern Conference.
What do you think, Greg?
Barring injury, I don't see any reason why not.
The question is, like, right now, are we about to witness, or are we already in the process of witnessing?
We're already in that process. Yeah. I feel like, I know we talked about the Cleveland game kind of being that the game that really set the spark and really created this whole road run that they've gone on now that we know they've basically just going on the road, won 10 straight in a month, which has never happened in NBA history before. So in general, when you look at what they're doing, and they're putting everything together. We talked about Wade being out earlier in the season. Now he's back into a rhythm. The entire team is seemingly in a rhythm right now. There's no reason to think that unless an injury, they're taking over.
I'll tell you why we're not going to see it just yet. Eventually, yes. But Boston, they're injured. Kevin Garnett's going to be out. 9 of their next 10 games are at home. So it coincides with a good part of their schedule. I think they're going to be able to hang around, stay close.
Rondo is now also coming back.
Rondo is back, yes. All right, next question. Greg, I'll start with you. Will the Spurs win 72 games this year?
Now, see, this is just getting thrown around too much. It began with the Heat when they got this collection of talent. People started throwing the number 72 out again. This is not going to happen for a long time.
They're 29-4.
I understand that, but much like a lot of veteran teams who get off to a really, really hot start, you're going to see a lull. It's going to happen, whether it happens mid-season prior to the All-Star break or after that. There's going to be a little bit of a lull. You're talking about losing only 6 more games throughout the rest of the season and finishing 72-10. I'm sorry, there's just no chance that's happening. And, you know, if you put together a collection of talent like they have in Miami, even that, you need guys to come out 82 games and play their hearts out, which is very, very hard these days in the NBA. I don't see the Spurs doing it, nor do I see anyone doing it in the next 3 to 5 years, even with this Miami thing.
All right, let's go to Ben. Ben, what do you think? Spurs, 72 games.
No, I tend to agree with Greg. You know, I think in the past we've seen Greg Popovich also manage his players' minutes a lot, too, down the stretch. You know, he's real wary of how much he plays guys like Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker. And I think, you know, he's perfectly willing to give away a few losses in the early spring so that he's got guys fresh for the playoffs. I think they're really ready to make a deep playoff push this year. He wants all of his guys ready to go, and I think you'll see them drop some games just for that reason alone.
I agree with both of you guys. Not going to happen this year. Question number 3, Ben, I'll start with you. Are the Bulls legitimate contenders in the East?
You know, like I was saying earlier, I think they're one of the four horses. It's tough to tell exactly with Chicago because, you know, their injury situation, you know, Boozer's out, and then when he finally comes back, then Noah's out. So I don't quite have a firm grasp on what their ceiling is as a team because I haven't seen them all really click together for an extended period of time. You look at the season that Derrick Rose is having, though. I mean, he's right up there, and he probably should be in some MVP discussions, playing lights out. I think they're going to be one of the final four. I don't know if they have enough this season to get over the hump. I think, you know, they obviously have a big hole at 2 that they're looking to address. If they can do something before the trade deadline that would, you know, kind of catapult them up a half step, I think that would be real helpful. But I think their future is still really bright. I'm just not sure this is the season.
I agree. This is not the season. I will say no, they cannot win the East this year. But Boston and Miami are both better.
The question is, can they contend? Absolutely they can contend.
I should have rephrased it. Can they win it? No, I don't think they can
win
it.
Yes, they can. When you have someone as good as Derrick Rose, who to me is number two on my MVP ballot we talked about 2 weeks ago, yes, you can beat pretty much anyone. Now, if you look at the Eastern Conference and the teams that they would be facing and the weaknesses those teams have, the Heat have a lot of trouble guarding the point guard position.
The Heat haven't had much trouble with anything lately.
Yeah, absolutely right. But the Celtics, you'll see, if Joakim Noah is there with the whole Joakim Noah-Garnett battle, that would be a tremendous series to watch.
But the Celtics have enough bigs. I say no, the Bulls cannot win the East this year. Not this year. They need one more player.
What's your opinion?
Question number four. Will the Houston Rockets, the Rockets started 3-10, Ben. Will the Houston Rockets make the playoffs out of the West?
Well, it's funny. It's a well-timed question. I just saw these guys play in person last night. I'll tell you, I don't think this is a playoff team right now, and frankly, half the roster looked like they thought they were going to be traded. I mean, they just kind of played like they weren't on the same page, they weren't together, they didn't know, you know, what direction the franchise is taking. I think they're reeling a little bit from the whole Yao Ming injury. Obviously, they've been playing pretty solid basketball, had a nice winning streak here recently after a really horrible start, but, you know, I just didn't get the sense that they were a cohesive unit, that their parts made sense. I can easily see them being active before the trade deadline because I think that they kind of see the writing on the wall. There's probably, you know, eight teams that are legitimately better than them in the Western Conference. I think they're on the outside looking in, and we know Daryl Morey's not afraid to mix it up.
That's a really good point. I didn't really consider the whole trade aspect because I look at them and I say, well, it's going to come down to probably Portland, Phoenix, Memphis, Houston, looking at that eighth spot. And I don't see why they can't be better than those teams, but that's a good point. So, you know, I was going to say yes, but Ben, you changed my mind. So I'll say no. What do you think?
I'm also saying no, not because I don't think the talent's there. I do think they're talented enough, and Aaron Brooks now with him being back, they should be able to go on a decent run. I look at Memphis, though, and I love what's going on in Memphis. I do think that they will be the eighth seed. I know Sergio Gonzalez last year picked them to be a playoff team. I think this year's their year. They had a great game last night against the Lakers. They're starting to put things together, and they have a full roster. So I do think they stay healthy. I think Memphis grabs that eighth seed.
All right, last question, Ben. Now, in 2000, we had arguably the worst draft class ever. This was the top 10 that year. Kenyon Martin, Stromile Swift, Darius Miles, Marcus Fizer, Mike Miller, DeMar Johnson, Chris Mim, Jamal Crawford, Joel Prisbilla, Keon Dooling. Terrible top 10. This year has not been very good. So we're going to take Blake Griffin out of the equation, even though he's considered a rookie. Is this the worst draft class since 2000?
I think you can make a pretty fair argument for that. You know, it's really too bad because I think we almost remember draft classes for that headliner, you know, and John Wall was supposed to be that headliner. And with him kind of, you know, being limited to some degree with these knick-knack injuries, it's really been a huge disappointment. I mean, I thought the hype coming into the season was going to be Wall versus Griffin, who was going to take that award. But, you know, you look past Wall, who's been kind of disappointing, and, you know, it is a pretty barren wasteland. So I don't think I would argue with you if you wanted to say that they were the worst class since then. You know, you have a class like Brandon Roy's class, you know, when he was the rookie of the year, you know, he wasn't the impact player that he's been the last couple seasons. His rookie year, he was pretty good, but he also missed a lot of time. You know, behind him was guys like Bargnani and LaMarcus Aldridge, who I don't think any of them were big time.
Hey,
rookies,
don't forget about Adam Morrison now.
Well, exactly. So, you know, look at that class. That's probably up there too, but yeah, you know, it's been kind of disappointing. We haven't seen Cousins impact games like we thought he would after Summer League, and there's been a lot of other just total no-shows.
Yeah, that was 2006. I would say this is the worst class so far since 2000.
It's got to be. I mean, you look at this list. We have the list here of players, and John Wall, number one. Evan Turner, who we expected to be, I'd say at least somewhat of a contributor this
good,
season,
yeah.
Not doing really anything of note. Then you have Derek Favors at three. DeMarcus Cousins at five. Looking down the rest of the draft, the only guys who stand out at 18, Oklahoma City drafted Eric Bledsoe, then traded him to the Clippers. Bledsoe obviously pushed into the mix there in L.A. when Baron Davis went down.
Yeah.
Bledsoe played some great minutes for them. And then you look at Landry Fields, second round to the New York Knicks. You know, if Blake Griffin's injured, maybe he's the rookie of the year this year, and that's a second-round pick. So
yeah.
Definitely not the top-heavy talent, and who knows what's going to come later on, but this could be one of the worst drafts of all time.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot for joining us. That's Ben Golliver, our CBSSports.com NBA blogger. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ben.
No doubt. Take care, guys.
All right, so let's move on and look at some of the storylines from around the league. And the Orlando Magic. Now, last week you had them in your power rankings in your top five.
Yes.
I didn't. I said, let's wait another week. Yes. I bow down to you, Greg.
Yes, thank you.
Here they are. They are tied with the Heat for the longest active winning streak in basketball. They won five in a row. And they've beaten the Spurs, the Celtics, the Nets, the Cavs, and the Knicks. Playing very well, and they're very balanced now.
Yes. Well, I mean, we knew that. The trade was made to give them a little bit of a spark on offense. They were so dreadful with the fast break early on prior to this trade. They made the moves, and now they're running up. Obviously, they're running up and down the floor much better, but they're also shooting the three ball better. We know that Orlando is built upon Dwight Howard's broad shoulders and then outside shooting. When you get the guys to hit the outside shots, they're almost unbeatable when Dwight Howard plays without foul trouble. So you put those things together, clearly you see why they're getting even better and better as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'm worried, though, with this Brandon Bass injury. A significant injury.
Well, especially trading away their depth in their front court before, now as you see.
Yeah, Ryan Anderson's going to have to step up. Bass has been in double figures for the last five games, but so has Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to produce, but he's not as good as Brandon Bass.
Definitely not. In the defensive end, they will struggle a little bit with him being out. Of course, Dwight Howard still protects the basket as well as anyone.
If he goes out, he's considering having arthroscopic knee surgery. Yes. That would sideline him for maybe a month. Yeah. All right, the Dallas Mavericks, as we look at the West, they snap a three-game skid. They had lost to Toronto, San Antonio, and Milwaukee. And this is why I had Dirk Nowitzki number one in my MVP list, and you did as well.
Yeah.
Did it stay that way last week?
You know what? I struggle because right now, for me, it's either Derrick Rose or Dirk Nowitzki.
Well,
so.
This is why it's Nowitzki for me, because it's a bunch of role players and Dirk Nowitzki. And they managed to win the game against the Thunder in the game that he did get hurt. But after that, again, they lost to Toronto, and like a banged-up Toronto team, not just Toronto. Then they lost to San Antonio, it's more understandable, and Milwaukee. Yeah. They're pretty bad without him, and they should get him back sometime this week, hopefully.
Yes.
But, you know, they snap a three-game skid, and all of a sudden they're, I think, four games behind the Spurs, who are 29-4.
Yeah.
So, they're four games back.
It's not bad when you have to worry on Jason Terry to be that guy at the end of the game, because he's very good at being clutch, hitting clutch shots. So when you have to rely on him to do that, that's fine. When you have to rely on him to carry you for 48 minutes, it's a struggle.
And now Caron Butler's hurt.
Yeah.
So he's got a knee injury. And you see reports it could be a couple months, could be the entire season.
Could be the year. Yeah.
Watch out for Carmelo Anthony. This team, you know, that Mark Cuban's always got his hand in it. You know, they're a sleeper.
They're definitely a sleeper.
But they might have to make a move. If Caron Butler's out for the year, I don't think they can win the championship.
They cannot win the West. There's no doubt about that. They would have to make some move.
All right, Kevin Garnett, we're going to talk about the Celtics later when we look at the power rankings. But he's going to be out about 2 weeks with a sprained calf. What do you think about the Lakers? Lakers are 1-3 in their last four home games. And they say good teams shouldn't get blown out at home.
They should not.
They keep getting blown out at home.
Yes, very good team that's getting blown out by teams they shouldn't get blown out by. You know, you're looking at, okay, if you go and you play San Antonio and you get blown out, fine. If you play against Memphis at home.
Yeah.
That is not fine. So
Milwaukee
something is wrong. But at the same time, is this what's going to be kind of the changing essence of this team? At some point, they need to realize we're not just going to coast and then just win the finals again. We do need to play some regular season basketball. So maybe a loss like this creates maybe a players-only meeting after the game in which they sit down and discuss really what's going on here. I think probably Pau Gasol and Kobe Bryant need to sit down and discuss working the ball better with one another.
All right, I'll give you an interesting stat. You ready?
Let's hear it.
Always loved Kobe stats on this show.
Yes.
Kobe Bryant, in wins, shoots 17.9 shots per game, 18 shots a game. In losses, 23.5 shots per game.
Yes.
He shoots 5.5 times more per game in losses than in wins. What do you make of that?
What I make of it is that he tries to shoot them back in the games when they're trailing. So you see that the game they're trailing, he's going to put up more shots, and then those are games they lose. Now, is that the right thing to do? It doesn't seem like that on paper because he's not taking quality shots. If he's taking wide-open jumpers, fine. But when he's forcing shots with 2-3 defenders on him, when he has an open guy on the wing that he's not passing it to because they missed the previous two jumpers, then it's a problem.
Well, let me read you this quote from Phil Jackson. Again, this is Monday as we record this, and this was about last night's game, the loss at home to the Memphis Grizzlies. Phil Jackson said, "We get behind early on in the third quarter on some stupid plays, poor passing, poor transition defense, and then Kobe has to screw up the game and start energizing the team by going one-on-one, and that takes the rest of the guys out as a consequence. That didn't bring us back in, but it did give us a little run." Interesting.
Yes.
He's looking at some way to spark them.
He's a genius, and you can't question his methods as a coach. So he's saying this for a reason.
Yeah.
It's very rare to hear a coach blatantly say a player's name and say they did this and this cost us.
Yeah.
So for him to do that, there's a method to his madness at all times. So realize that he's doing something to motivate number 24 to go out and change his game and make this team win basketball games.
And what did you say? They have 11 losses now, about a month earlier than last year?
Yeah. I mean, if you look back at recent trends for the Lakers, you had last season they had their 12th loss right there the first game of February. So you're looking at about a month. And then two seasons ago, their 12th loss came in the first game of March. So certainly struggling compared to the way they played the last two seasons. But as we've mentioned with the Lakers, it's all about the playoffs. And let's see what happens when they get there. But certainly something needs to happen for them to get this team together the way they know they can play.
Now, I don't want to be the podcast that just talks about all the good teams all the time. So I wanted to give a little bit of love to some of the, not exactly bottom feeders, but these teams that aren't really in the spotlight but are doing better. And I want to look at the Clippers in the West and the Philadelphia 76ers.
How about Tyreke Evans hitting a game-winning half-court shot the other night? Absolutely beautiful. I mean, obviously, it's luck, but heck of a shot to win a game on.
Yeah, great shot by Tyreke Evans. But we're not talking about the Kings because they're horrible.
No.
But the Clippers, on the other hand, don't have a good record, but it's not exactly a team I want to play right now.
They play great basketball, and I watched them a lot early on in the season just so I could see Blake Griffin and get my Blake Griffin fix. And they lost a lot of games. I have not yet. I basically need to go on roids before I wear basketball jerseys. But when you look at the overall team, they clearly are just a bunch of guys who are kind of street ballers who run and just play basketball. They're not really a collective unit as of yet.
Not yet.
So they just play basketball.
But
and there are nights where they have leads, they go into the fourth quarter, and then this whole just playing basketball thing doesn't work.
They were 1-13.
Yes.
And since then they're 9-9.
Yeah.
So this is a team. A couple seasons ago it was the Thunder that you didn't want to play them in the second half of the year because they were kind of blossoming, they were becoming a good team.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the Clippers now. I'm not sure the Clippers make the playoffs next year. They're not going to make it this year. Yeah. But maybe we're starting to see the beginning of the Clippers.
It's a resurgence. Or if there ever was a surgeance, maybe.
And
is this
DeAndre,
an original surgeon?
Yeah, it's not a resurgence. And DeAndre Jordan's playing well.
Yes.
You know, you talk about Blake Griffin all the time, but Chris Kaman's been out for them, and they're still playing 500 basketball lately. DeAndre Jordan's playing well. Baron Davis is actually playing better than I thought he would play.
Yes.
If they can get anything more out of Al-Farouq Aminu, that'd be good. How about the Sixers? What an 8-game road trip for the Sixers. You realize how tough of a stretch this is?
This was bad.
They're 3-4 through 7 games, but they've played Orlando, Chicago, Boston, Denver, Golden State, Phoenix, the Lakers, and now they will finish up with the Hornets tonight. And again, 3-4 through the first 7 games. Not a great team, but pretty good defensively.
Yep.
Without Andre Iguodala right now, managing to stay in the playoff race, I think Doug Collins is doing a great job there.
He certainly is. Jrue Holiday is giving him some good minutes. You've got Elton Brand, who's kind of gone back to the old Elton Brand, rebounding, shooting a good percentage. In general, we don't expect this team to do much great, but like you said, to see Doug Collins put them on the right track at least is a good thing for fans of that team and really for fans of the NBA, just to see a good quality franchise back to where they should be.
So the Clippers were 1-13, and they're 9-9 since, and the Sixers were 2-10. They are 11-10 since. So these are two teams that you might see your team playing them on the schedule. You look at the record, you think it's a win.
Yep.
But no, these are about 500 clubs right now, so you don't want to play them. How about your boy Tracy McGrady?
Team Mac.
He's playing like 35 minutes a game.
That's what I like.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
How many more weeks before he's out for the season?
You know what? Let's not jinx him just yet. Tracy McGrady, one of my favorite players of all time. I began my NBA writing experience with T-Mac and his website. In general, he's been playing very good minutes. He's not forcing shots. He's shooting a good percentage. He's moving the ball. He's actually playing more of the role of a playmaker for them. They had an injury to Rodney Stuckey. Tracy McGrady stepped in, played great basketball, had a game
he's
about
like Magic Johnson now.
He looks like
all
and that's
positions.
The thing is that he's always been a very good distributor.
Look like it, Greg. Don't get
at that height when he's handling the ball. You don't normally see guys of that height.
I make a sarcastic comment. You're like, yeah, absolutely.
No. If you watch him play with the ball, it is similar to that because you don't see many 6'9 guys.
He's a point forward
who can dribble the lane and then still have the vision to really find anyone. And he's able to do that. So I commend him and how he's playing, and what he's doing now is at least showing teams around the league that, hey, I have some gas in the tank if you'd like me to come in and contribute in the playoffs. Unfortunately, what won't happen in Detroit? Won't be
no,
anything
not
there.
This year. All right, we got two more things to do. We got to do our top five power rankings, and then our top five Coach of the Year candidates. This week's award is Coach of the Year. Next week, All-Star teams.
All-Star teams. Should be a very interesting debate in the Western Conference,
yeah.
Looking at the guards out West. Plenty of talent. Maybe some big names.
I'm telling you right now, Monte Ellis is an all-star.
Okay.
And I think you can make the case he should be the starting shooting guard.
Wow. See, again, the fans choose the starters.
It'll be Kobe.
Let's not even discuss who's going to be a starter because the fans are going to vote the same guys they always do. Yao Ming's going to be starting at center. We're going to have all these votes for people who really don't deserve them, but they're popular.
So the power rankings. You want to go first this time?
I will. You actually know what?
I have to apologize.
And apologize to me
and
the city of San Antonio and the Spurs franchise. So you can start off by doing
that. Well, I did watch some Spurs basketball this week,
yes.
And they are definitely better than I thought. And the main reason why I didn't have them up at the top, I think I had them fourth last week in a very close 1-4.
Yes.
I didn't think they were as good defensively as the other three teams ahead of them. But now that George Hill is back, They're going to be a better defensive team. I watched them against the Thunder. They did a great job on Kevin Durant. He finished with 16 points. It was Ime Udoka, but first it was Richard Jefferson. These guys were playing really good defense. Kobe Bryant was 8 of 27 against them.
They make every shot tough, no matter what. Yeah. There's a hand in your face, no matter how you get there.
DeJuan Blair is a really good player.
Yeah.
He may not do it every night, but he's a threat, no doubt about it.
Second-round draft pick that just somehow slipped by almost every single NBA team.
Well, he had some medical issues,
and
some teams were afraid of that, but not the Spurs. They took a chance on him, and so far is paying off. And this team, very dangerous offensively. They are not afraid to push the pace.
Yeah.
They're clearly number one right now. Number two, you know, the Celtics and the Mavs were at the top last week, but I can't do it anymore because they're hurt and they've struggled. So number two for me is the Heat.
Yeah.
Problem with the Heat, they're coasting a little bit. It seems like, you know, that game against New York, they built a 20-point lead in the first half and they had to fight off the comeback against Golden State, against Houston. It's like, you can't just sit there and wait for the fourth quarter to turn it on.
Yeah.
But they're coasting a little bit, but that's all right because they know they're going to win.
They're that talented. You can kind of let that happen.
Number three, I got the Celtics. They just need to get healthy. They got good big men. I think they're better equipped to deal with the loss of Garnett than Rondo, in my opinion. Number four, Magic are in my top five now. They're so balanced right now. They're red hot. What?
Again, that's a team that I had in my top
five
last week.
You did well last week.
Okay.
I played it more conservatively. And number five for me is the Mavs.
Okay.
Still a great team, but without Caron Butler, I'm wondering what they're going to be like. I think that's going to hurt their perimeter defense.
Without a doubt.
And obviously it's going to hurt their depth. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Stevenson doesn't sound so good. Dominique Jones, a rookie. Again, they're going to have to make a move. But for me, it goes Spurs, Heat, Celtics, Magic, Mavericks. All right, genius.
Now, you basically just completely decided to steal my top five, I see.
It's the same top five?
And look at my teams. But basically, what I look at, last week I had the Spurs at one. Last week I had the Miami Heat at three and moved them to two. And the Celtics are now down at number three for me. I've got the Magic at number four and then Dallas number five. Now, we mentioned Dallas, obviously, right now. The struggles are injuries, and that's going to be for a while. So if you look at the power rankings, when we look at power rankings, we're looking at who's the best right now. So for me right now, Dallas has to be at five.
I kind of make it a hybrid of who's the best right now, but also going forward.
Yeah. So the Spurs, as you mentioned, just head and shoulders above everyone right now, playing tremendous basketball. They're healthy. Great coaching with Greg Popovich. The Miami Heat are doing the things we expected. Celtics need to get healthy. Magic, as we've talked about, the trade. What I feel is just it made them the team that they try to be, which is to be able to run and have Dwight Howard control things defensively.
It's kind of a fairy tale right now for the Magic. They're going to hit a bump in the road.
Of course.
So we'll see
what happens.
You know, they did lose their first two after the trade, and then they responded with a five-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. But I want to see a little bit more of them. I want to see them play against the best. You know, and they did play that game against the Celtics on Christmas. It was kind of a weird game.
Definitely.
All right, well, we'll see. Coach of the Year. Let's look at Coach of the Year, and again, we'll give our top five, and this time you have the honors.
Coach of the Year, we talked about this guy already a couple times today, Greg Popovich in San Antonio. To me, right now, is just on top of the platform. Looking down, there are three or four other coaches who are making an impact this year. It was tough for me to put a number five coach, but I did come up with that. I'm looking at Rick Carlisle in Dallas at number two.
Yeah, me too. I was like, number five. I don't know.
If you look at Rick Carlisle, it's a team, again, we know it's Dirk Nowitzki and a bunch of other talent, but he's done a good job of implementing the young guys into the roster and really creating a team that's not just six or seven deep. You can go about eight, nine deep with Dallas. At number three, I have Jerry Sloan out of Utah. Out of the five guys, three of them have won the award before. Jerry Sloan's not one of them that I have here. Jerry Sloan certainly deserves at some point
Why
to get
Jerry
one of these
Sloan,
awards.
What have they done this year that's so special this is the year that Jerry Sloan
It's not that they've done anything extra special, because if you look at the 1-8 in both conferences, I don't know that there's too many surprises. But to see Utah right there with the Lakers, to me,
it's more of a reflection on the Lakers.
If they're just as good as the Lakers right now, Jerry Sloan's done a really good job. Now, yes, it is a reflection
of the Lakers. That's a reflection
of the Lakers. They have done poorly, but who else are you going to pick? I mean, really, if you look around.
I have five guys.
So I've got Jerry Sloan. For me, he's at number three, slightly ahead of Mike D'Antoni of the New York Knicks, who obviously won the award in 2004-2005 with Phoenix. But he's just definitely implementing his style of play, and now he has the roster to actually adhere to the way he plays, a big man and a point guard who can do what he needs. And then finally, for me, number five, out of New Orleans, Monty Williams started off the season a little bit rough. Chris Paul obviously has to do with everything of the success of that team, but Monty Williams has done a very good job with what I don't think is a very talented roster.
No, but he's got them playing good defense all year long. So what was your top five again?
Again, going down, Greg Popovich, number one, Rick Carlisle, two, Jerry Sloan at three, D'Antoni, number four, and then Monty Williams.
So I have three of your five.
Yes.
Popovich, one, without question. I mean, they've reinvented the Spurs.
Who else could you
And you've got a center in Tim Duncan that's kind of an average player, just in terms of production.
Yes, this
I know he's a better player than the production, but he's not getting that type of Tim Duncan production.
Certainly
this year.
Is not.
13.6 points, 9.4 rebounds for Duncan. Tom Thibodeau, I have number two. Bulls are seventh in the NBA in points allowed per game, but second in opponents' field goal percentage behind the Heat. So it hasn't taken him long to institute his philosophies and be a great defensive team. Yeah. And, you know, he's a rookie coach, so I give him a lot of credit for not having a healthy roster all year. Boozer was out, and then Noah was out. And, again, it's not exactly a deep team. It's not loaded with studs, but they're playing his brand of basketball. Number three, Rick Carlisle. I like the way that he's thrown zone defenses out. I like the fact that he's gotten the Mavs to be a better defensive team. Number four, this is the one that you're going to disagree with me on. I have Eric Spoelstra.
Yes.
Now, you might say he's been given the keys to the Cadillac or whatever, and he's not driving it off the road.
Yes.
That's fine. I can understand anybody who wants to disagree with this pick. But I think he's done a better job than people give him credit for.
He's done a better job than a lot expect. I didn't expect him to do this good of a job.
Especially when you consider how bad of a start they got off to, how everybody was calling for his head.
Oh, yeah.
And he stayed
poised.
The
whole bumping into LeBron became a whole big
issue.
Yeah, you figured, oh, man, he's going to get
fired. Like, he really bumped on it.
Because
they
bumped each other, yes.
Yeah, so I think he's done a good job sort of weathering the storm.
I don't dislike that pick. I don't dislike it because he also, I believe, came up with the idea of kind of the running gun. If you get the rebound, you're then the person that leads the break for the Miami Heat. And that, what I saw, it sparked their offense, which then made their defense even better also, because you're telling these guys, if you play better defense and rebound defensively, I'll let you run the break. So that brought out the effort in these guys, which maybe wasn't there early on.
Plus, they're the number one defensive team in basketball.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is.
When you consider...
Well, it's not amazing. They have the athletes to do it.
No, when you consider how horrible their centers and their point guards are.
Horrible at what? I mean, if you look at Joel Anthony, he's great at defending.
Joel Anthony doesn't even play sometimes.
But you're right.
Because Spoelstra is smart enough to say, if we're playing a team where Ilgauskas is a better fit, I'm going to play Ilgauskas. If we're playing a team where I need Joel Anthony, I'll play Joel Anthony.
And that's kind of the good thing to have. You have different variations of your center. If you need a guy who's going to hit a 15-footer, you bring in Big Z. If you're going up against a team that really their big man only rebounds and just tries to score in the inside, Joel Anthony's perfect. Against the New York Knicks, you remember Joel Anthony's
a
great job.
But you understand, most teams don't want either of those two guys as their starting center.
It's true.
Okay, and number five on my list is Mike D'Antoni. My problem with Mike D'Antoni, he's going to run his team into the ground. He does not use his bench well. I think I'm already starting to see signs of fatigue from Raymond Felton. Yeah. Felton's been struggling lately. He's third in the league in minutes behind Monte Ellis and Rudy Gay, 39 minutes per game. Mike D'Antoni keeps saying, I got to give these guys rest. I got to give these guys rest. But they're so caught up in winning because they haven't done it in so long. Yeah. They can't afford to lose games. And every time you look at a box score, they're playing 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So, again, for me, it's Popovich, Thibodeau, Carlisle, Spoelstra, Mike D'Antoni. Keep an eye on Doug Collins. I also have Monty Williams on my honorable mention list, and Vinny Del Negro, I think, is doing a nice job.
Yeah, he's done. And no expectations. He's done pretty much what you expect.
Yeah. Greg, your final thought?
Final thought, like I said last week, San Antonio had a big week leading into now. We see how good they are. Now let's see where these other teams are going to head from here. Obviously the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic. I say watch the Magic this week and see how they really become cohesive and become the team that we believe they can be.
All right, for Greg Urbano, I'm Adam Azer. I want to thank Ben Golliver for calling in and our producer, Matt Brodsky. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll be back next Monday.